they say we should have known better than to fall so deep down into this rabbit hole.
Get
we found.
Ready. It's time again to venture down the rabbit hole into the world of cybersecurity. You're plugged into the podcast for security leaders and practitioners with a business sense. Prepare for unique interviews, insights, and practical advice that makes your job just a bit easier. And now, please welcome your guides on this adventure, James Jardine and the White Rabbit, Ruffalos.
Okay, folks, welcome down the Security Rabbit Hole to another edition of the Down the Security Rabbit Hole podcast. This is Raph. Oh, totally solo and in the flesh today with a good buddy of mine who've been trying to get on the show for a very long time. Kind of fitting that you're 299, buddy. Chris Abramson. Hey, buddy. Welcome to the show.
How's it going, Raph?
So, it has been a hot minute since we tried to get you on the show.
Only a hot minute.
A hot minute. you've got a fairly wide breadth of experience. Tell us a little bit about you, what you're doing, and then we'll dive into some security stuff.
Oh man, so these days I am acting as Director of Security Engineering and Delivery, and I guess the next question is going to come out is like, what the hell is delivery engineering?
Yeah, you know.
So, I'm still at Walgreens. And I'm owning the spaces that basically there's not a clean fit anywhere. You know, you think ops, you know, ops has a clean fit, and assurance and compliance has a clean fit, and things like that. So you're
the Huckleberry.
I'm the Huckleberry, baby. I'm the Huckleberry.
You are Val Kilmer. That's brilliant.
So I've got the AppSec space, the mold management space. I've got traditional engineering, just build all day long.
Okay.
And I've got the typical security awareness program stuff.
All the fun stuff.
All the fun stuff, man.
Make people care about security. All right, so what? You know, you've been in security how long?
Oh God! Wow, you're gonna age me, dude. No. So actually, I started out in security. We're going back almost 20 years.
Back in my day.
Here's the funny part. When I started in security, you know, you and I probably started at the same time.
Yeah.
I actually went to work. I went the other way, dude. I started working for a company doing mainframe security. I was writing interfaces for assembler code.
Wow. So, and we'll welcome back to. We're glad you picked this side because I can't imagine you as a mainframe developer, right? Yeah, I mean, I can, yeah, but it's kind of ugly.
I can't see myself writing COBOL for a living. Although I'm sure the guys that are writing COBOL. Are
I was gonna say they're not suffering. They're not suffering for a low paycheck salary right now.
No.
All right. So look, having done all that's a huge swath of stuff. It's 2018, you know, the industry's been evolving. Where are the major challenges that you think we see as an industry right now?
Well, you know, I think we're still riding that wave of just good security, you know, making our way through the day. Okay.
You know, getting out of our own way.
Basically getting out of our own way and, you know, kind of letting the business do what they need to do, but guiding them appropriately through the security landmines. So, you know, one of the biggest hurdles that I think we still have as an industry is vuln management space. It's the educating our leadership and our peers on what they need to be doing to protect themselves.
Yeah, vuln management's a tough space because a couple episodes back we had the Kenna folks. They were talking about how to patch properly, and I think the takeaways were if you patched, you know, just by like the big names, like the big name software brands, right, when they come out mm-hmm. with patches, if you use that as your prioritization, like all the ones you know about, you are just as good as taking a random guess as to what to patch. And that's terrifying.
You know, surprisingly, I probably wouldn't disagree with them. You know, but I think it's a language barrier. You know, you and I have talked about this, God, going back years, about how to articulate to the business leadership the cost effectiveness of doing all this stuff.
Yeah, okay. Why it makes sense to.
Yeah, why does it make sense to do this? So, one of the things that I've been diving into is how to make the language more palatable.
Okay.
And trying to slot it into where does it make the most sense to do it. And one of the ideas that I'm tinkering around with right now is changing the language. You know, when you hear vulnerability, when somebody says the word vulnerability to you, what's the first thing it elicits in your head? What does it equate to?
Well, I mean, look, it's a fear thing, right? It's a weakness. We think about it in terms of danger, right?
Yep.
Something that's physically bad.
Yep. And so what happens is most of the organization goes, it's a vulnerability. It's a security problem.
Right.
And that's the immediate reaction.
Yep.
When somebody says vulnerability management. Oh, that's a security problem.
That's a damn good point. Right. Well, and that's how security got to own all the things that are not our problem.
Correct. And what that has created is a culture inside of organizations that I believe is starting to hurt us, because when you make something that is ultimately a larger IT problem just a security problem,
Security,
I don't own the systems.
Yeah.
I can't patch your systems. We got to change the language. So we got to start educating on, guys, if you look at most of the major scanning systems out there, you know, Qualys, Tenable, Rapid7, the reality is, as you look inside their systems, you'll see there's a patch date for every single vulnerability that isn't a configurational issue or an unsupported piece of software.
Yeah.
Guys, it's a patching issue. It's natural, just IT hygiene.
Yeah.
That's all it is. And I think if we start to change the language of what it is that we're saying, that leadership teams will start to understand a little bit better what it is that needs to be done. Operations teams actually will win in this scenario. You know, there's a reason for operation teams to be there. And I think they just don't realize it yet.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, look, there's been several great discussions on this. Anderson Horowitz's A16Z podcast had a couple episodes back. It's been a while, but they had somebody talking about, I forget who it was exactly, but they were talking about, you know, agile and the agile enterprise and building resiliency in, and that companies that sort of get it quickly realize that rather than being averse to fear and failure, they want to induce as much of it as possible so they can become resilient to it.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, I still think that as great as that conversation is, and yes, that's absolutely true. There are more and more companies that go down that route every day. But, you know, 99.8% or some huge percentage, maybe it's not, hopefully it's not that high, but some huge overwhelming percentage is still... I mean, I'm still talking to companies that do end of year holiday freeze, right? Production freezes. No changes can be made to production between, 2 weeks before Thanksgiving to 2 weeks after New Year's.
Yep,
still a thing.
You'll find that in the retail industry without a doubt.
Yeah,
I mean, you
it's
don't
common.
In the retail industry, you do not touch your production systems all the way up from Thanksgiving till past Christmas.
Yep.
I mean that's the boom season.
Yeah.
That's the times that you make the most money, and that's it, and you just don't touch them. But at the same time,
that's always when things go wrong. By the way,
when the most transactions are flowing through systems, is it the best opportunity to hide something that you don't want people to see?
Well, even then, so way back in the day, I used to when I worked in an e-commerce organization. The time that, they say change freeze. What they really mean is only things that are ultra, ultra emergencies that you can convince me of will go in, which means when those things break something, it's cataclysmic, right? Because then it's everybody mad scramble. We don't really know the impact because we're not supposed to put this thing in. We're going to try. And then you get the marathon 72-hour conference bridge. It's like, oh, my God, the whole thing's down. What do we do? We'll try something. Yeah. Worst words have never been said on a troubleshooting call. Then let's try something.
Yeah, you don't want to hear that in the middle of a call when you're trying to get your .com back up and running,
right?
So that you can start taking in transactions and making your customers happy, and they aren't going to the competitor.
Right, exactly. So I mean, look, the vault management space, it's certainly maturing. But there are various numbers of scoring system. There's various ways of trying to figure out what to patch, when to patch. The bottom line is there are as much software as we have in our systems, in our environments, there are more patches coming than we can conceivably patch against. And the point of that whole Kata podcast was that we basically have gotten to a point where you can't do it all. So you need to have a formula for figuring out how to get as much as you can and get the right ones. And it turns out luck is your best guess if you're not careful.
Well, I think luck. But you hit on a good point there. There's a lot of tools out there. There's a lot of companies that are giving us the tactical approach of being able to look at vulnerability data, understand what it is, how it's affecting the environment. You know, you get threat intelligence thrown in
sure.
for what's exploitable.
Yep.
But I think at the end of the day, what you got to be able to do and what you got to be able to articulate to these operations teams is where's the biggest bang for your buck? Where are you going to spend that time? And I think that's where, as security professionals, if we're doing our job right, we're helping to educate those teams with information that just gives them the ability to go in and do exactly what we want them to do, and that's to close the holes.
Yeah. Okay, that's fair.
That strategically will keep the business up and running while not having the impact on those systems that the businesses don't want. Because ultimately, that's the name of the game. Is
right.
Down. Let's get a downtime window. You know, and it turns into a giant argument between 50 teams in an organization trying to
all
garner time for putting a patch on a system.
Well, and folks, and if you're listening to this going, I've never had this problem, ask yourself and be honest, how many patches you've applied in your career that have done worse in terms of cratering your system? I mean, remember back when we all had, Windows 95, NT, XP? How many times did you apply a patch and you literally sat there and closed your eyes and held your breath?
And prayed to God.
And prayed to God that it would come back, right? Like, oh, please, 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 please. Oh, there it is, thank God. And you're like, okay, check all the functionality. Okay, everything still works. Woo! But I mean,
it's exactly that mentality
right.
that has scared our systems guys into not wanting to patch.
Because it's not, none of it's resilient.
Exactly. But the reality of it is I think the big players out there,
yeah.
big companies that, you know, you hope and pray that their patches won't take down your system, they've gotten really good at targeting their OS environments, their middleware, to
sure.
patch those systems appropriately without impacting the overall system. Where you get the hang-ups is when you've got development teams that are relying on libraries and hooks into the system for their applications, and that's the space that you've got to start getting a little more effective in and working with those application teams to make sure that they aren't playing in spaces they shouldn't be playing.
Yeah,
in.
It's all the dependencies that have been in your software forever, in your stack forever, that you don't account for because
yep.
nobody keeps track of them because they're just open source stuff to include.
Yeah. When was the last time you saw a CMDB actually act as a CMDB?
And we're gonna go rarely. And so I've seen lots of implemented CMDBs that were relatively data set complete. Now, when they're like, oh, how many entities are in your CMDB? 88,112. How many entities do you have in total, do you think? And you're 88,112. You're like, oh, that's fantastic. You're 100%. They're like, great. Can I see some of your data? They're like, well, like for this one, we only have the machine name. Here we've got the machine name and, you know, like something about it, an IP address, but nothing more. But the rest of these records, we have, you know, a varying degree of what's in it. You're like, well, so the data's inconsistent. Awesome.
Yep.
Right? Well, so what's worse, having no data or having data that you can't trust?
I'd go with the no data.
Right, because then at least you can spray and pray and go. But from an enterprise perspective, and this kind of always bugged me as a semi-practitioner, but I'm in the field, I'm not working on the enterprise side, so I don't have this perspective. But we talked about it repeatedly over and over and over again, back with Jeff Schilling, early this year, January, I want to say. And the conversation went something like this. So Spectre and Meltdown, massive, you know, chip level problems, potential for humongous harm. So what's the patch? Like replace the CPU or apply this fix to the operating system. But by the way, there's this caveat where you might lose up to 25 to 30% system performance. You're like, cool. So a vulnerability that may or may not ever be exploited, because it's frankly kind of difficult and there's lots of caveats, etc., or losing 30% of my system capacity, which goes back to you talking, you know, you've got a conversation with your ops person, right? Your app people going, so I'm going to go patch this all, but you're going to lose 30% of your server capacity. And I bet the look on their faces is basically priceless.
Oh,
like
jaw drops hit the floor. Yeah, you'll never convince anybody to patch something where you say you're going to lose 30% of your capacity.
Right.
It isn't going to happen. And that's where, you know, okay, let's be honest. The security guy is going, patch it,
yeah,
please.
Yeah. But the bad guys.
But, you know, the bad guys, they're coming. There's going to be an exploit. And, you know, the ops guys are going, and I think as, you know, security people, we've got to be more realistic. We've got to be going, all right, lose 30% capacity on a server that's running, you know, our core systems. Okay.
Yeah, does that actually mean?
What's the
reality? Because that's money. Because when you're buying Azure or Amazon CPU cycles, that is actual money you're losing.
So hold on. Now you've dipped a different way, though.
Okay.
So now you're talking Azure, Amazon, cloud hosting. Where are they at in the patching cycle?
Well,
because remember, I don't own the underlying hardware.
Yeah, right. So Amazon came out and said at the time, like, we're going to start applying patches, and they started to, and there was like articles posted about, you know, as soon as all the VMs got rebooted, 30% of my capacity, my system's, you know, losing all this. Like, yeah, because the way, if you understand the flaw, basically you're taking away the CPU's ability to cheat, right, to get a performance gain. What that means is it has to follow the rules, and now you're getting
it was designed for,
right? And I like, oh, so yeah. So the interesting topic of discussion around the security roundtables right around that time was, so did Amazon just lose 30% of its capacity with nothing else running?
Yeah, no.
The answer was close. Depending on what, so the answer really, the reality is, depends on how arithmetic intensive and memory intensive the process was, that was the piece of software that was running it. So if you're doing something boring, no. But if you're doing something if you're running a Bitcoin miner, yeah, you're losing big time capacity because that CPU is not going to be able to cheat anymore. Which means,
you just schooled me.
which means, right? And I ended up having to learn quite a bit about this because every customer I had asked. What ended up happening was, in systems that were well below system cloud their capacity, right? So, you know, we're well below our performance threshold level. Reboot or apply patch. Reboot. Oh crap! We're at capacity on these servers. What happened? You're like, we applied a security patch, and then the ire started, right? Uh-huh. Because, well, the security is now costing us money. Like, but the patches, but the bad guys, right? I feel like that's the same argument that we make with the TSA, like, but the terrorists, who will think of the children?
Yeah, it does ring kind of the whole, the sky is falling, and, you know, the bad guys are at the door.
Yeah.
It does ring like that.
Right. So, but that gets that very, very real point where you start to think about, okay, there are times where, like, whoever designed that CPU was not stupid. They're not ignoring, like, they're not, oh, I don't know what a security bug is. They were looking at this going, and I'd be willing to bet some cash on this, that if we can go back in time and watch them do this, somebody in that room said, you know, if we do this, there's a potential that somebody one day might figure out how to use this to break it into the CPU and steal control and other parts. And they're like, yeah, but think of how much performance gain we're going to get.
Yeah, that's in some cases that's ingenuity. That's breaking through barriers of trying to get more capacity, more speed, more transaction processing out of the system.
Well,
I mean, let's be honest, dude. How many developers do you and I know have taken shortcuts over the years in the grace of, you know, having smaller code set?
Oh, all of them.
And being able to get away with not having
The answer is all of them.
Exactly.
Every single... That's what makes a good... That's the difference between a lazy sysadmin and a good and a security person, right? Because a lazy sysadmin says, I can script the hell... I can spend an hour on this project, which means that forever this thing will run twice as fast. And security people are like, that's a terrible idea. You should never do that. They're like, yeah, watch me. Hold my beer.
And it happens every day, and it's continuing to happen.
And it's going
to
keep happening, right?
But here's the thing. All of those things that happened 5 or 10 years ago, now people are figuring it out. People are having the opportunity to look at the source code or at the underlying architecture of systems, and they're starting to realize that there are holes where no one actually had the time or the patience to look before. People are getting a lot of people are getting more savvy.
Well, look, hindsight's 20/20, though. I mean,
oh, of course it is.
So I want your take on this, because you're pseudo in this space. I had a fascinating conversation. So my buddy Andy Green, who's a professor down at Kennesaw State, who occasionally listens to the show and is going to get interviewed shortly. He had me in front of the class, and we talked about, like, you know, how to do risk management, apply some of the things that they were learning in the real world. And they had just heard about the heart monitor problem, the pacemakers
the pacemaker hacking,
which were remotely exploitable, yeah. Blah blah blah.
I think,
right?
It was like the Bluetooth.
And it was RFID.
Yeah.
And there's no password on it, you know, or predictable password, I remember, something like that. And they're like, well, you know, and so somebody that I laid out the scenario. I said, so what would you do differently? And all of them said, well, we'd encrypt, we put passwords on. I go, great, let me give you a scenario. You are 1,000 miles from home. You had an accident. You're in the back of an ambulance, and your heart is having problems beating. Your pacemaker is having a hard time keeping up. The guy or gal in the back of that ambulance needs to access that pacemaker. But in order, because it's encrypted and it's password protected, they have to make sure your doctor gets the call on the other side of the earth and has some way to access that system. So by the time they do that, you're kind of dead. They're like, well, So by the way, the fix for that, like, well, I'm like, so would you get yours patched if you had it? Of course I would. I said, okay, so you're going to go to a doctor's office. The thing that's regulating beating your heart is going to be actively updated and then restarted. Like, granted, you're in your doctor's office. I'm like, you understand what happens when this thing hiccups, right? They're like, So I asked the question, like, how many of you in this room, if you had to do that right now, would do it? 2 people out of a class of like 20 raised their hand.
Really?
Yeah. They're like, oh, yeah, we'd do that. I'm like, okay. I'm like, what about the rest of you? They're like, hell no. Because they look at the analysis. So we did analysis on it. You have to be within short range of somebody. You know, you have to have malicious intent. You have to this, this, and this. They're like, so ultimately somebody in the back of the room basically said, well, I could just shoot somebody easier. I'm like, and that's why we threat model, boys and girls.
This is the whole threat or not threat, risk assessment of the situation, or I was going to say threat analysis, but yeah, well, it is the threat analysis. Is you're looking at something, the potential for something to be attacked, and you got to ask yourself all these questions of what's the likelihood, how realistic is it, how many avenues do I have, and when you get down to it, you start to realize, especially in our space, the avenues of attack get very small when you start to compound all of the other things that have to happen almost perfectly in order for that to be taken advantage of.
Well, the PGP email recently, like, right, you know, where like, oh my God, PGP's broken. But to exploit it, you have to be able to read be in their mailbox, read their email, force this thing to happen, resend, copy the clipboard, and I'm like, I get it that you're not reading the encrypted email, but you're in somebody's mailbox reading their email. Like,
there.
Like, okay, so you're not reading the encrypted stuff, which means it could all be encrypted and you're not getting anything. But I'm like, but you're already in the system. There's a phenomenal XKCD comic that I keep referencing, and it's several years old now. And I'm going to have to re-find it and repost the link. But it had basically said, you know, encryption or why encryption's all the efforts towards encryption were kind of fruitless. And they said, you know, they've got a person and they've got two people standing in the one square, two people standing there, like, okay, we can run a password cracker and we can do this, and this. And then they're like, wow, this is kind of starting to get, you know, big of how much we can do to finally get this thing. And the next square is, or I could use this, you know, $5 wrench to beat his hand until he tells me the password. Like, have you properly mapped the threat out here?
It never ceases to amaze me that as you know, professionals we're programmed, you know, mentally to think of all of the strange and obtuse scenarios that could happen.
Yeah.
Could. Emphasis on could.
Yes.
When the reality of it is that the average criminal will take the easiest, shortest path to the prize that they can possibly come up with. And this comes from, you know, past experience working with friends in law enforcement and such, that, you know, nobody goes after the hard. Why?
Look, this is
there's no payoff in the hard.
This is not what was the movie? Italian Job? We're like, oh, we're going to get the thermal lance. We're going to go crack that special safe. Like, or we're just going to steal the truck because that's a lot easier.
Yeah. The guys out there who are going after data and trying to break into systems, I guarantee you they're not spending hours upon hours upon hours upon hours upon days upon months upon years trying to figure out the best way to crack into your system. They're looking for the quickest, dirtiest, easiest path in.
Yeah, and then, you know, as long as they achieve their objective,
and
who cares?
If you're dumb enough to actually email back the Egyptian prince, sorry,
yeah,
you
really
just got scammed.
Yeah, so. There's no patch. As Ron White said, there's no patch for stupid. And sometimes you own awareness, so you know. Like, sometimes you can teach people, you can do everything you can, and there's still that part of our human nature that wants to be helpful. You've got somebody coming in the building behind you holding, you know, two big boxes and some coffees, and they're like, yeah, my badge is in my back pocket. You're like, that's all right, check it later.
I think it was my boss, Tyler, that I was talking with about this, and we were talking about, in general, like social engineering stuff, and he was telling me a story of a couple guys that he worked with when they did a social engineering exercise, that they would just walk up to the smoker's area and say, hey, can I bum a cigarette?
And walk back in.
And they'd walk back in with the rest of the smokers and spend time in the wandering around the building, you know, just having free reign of whatever is in there. You know, they don't go after the hard. They go after the easiest, quickest path to getting what they want. And so...
Well, that's how it's always. I mean, it's how it's always been. We can have exotic ways, and look, that's not minimizing the fact that there are people and entities and criminals that leverage exotic exploits and go after, you know, that 0.01% of the victim that is a nation state emissary or the president or, you know, some cabinet member. They have something secret and they're gonna do whatever they need to do to get that, right? To get that data, to get that information, to steal whatever off that laptop, phone, or device. But the other 99.999% of us, they're gonna go, hey, you still have MSO, you know, MSO 6014 not patched.
Sorry.
Yeah, you know, right.
You were easy pickings. So
and it was there. You know,
it's the easy, fast things. I mean, the quick ransomware attack. And I'm sorry, but anybody who pays the actual ransomware.
Well, true, right? But it got to the point where the ransomware vendors had tech support lines that would work with you to get Bitcoin, that would work with you to decrypt.
They would actually educate you on how to get your computer back from them.
Something wrong with this model.
When the criminals have a tech support line to basically teach you how to get Bitcoin to pay them, man, we have now crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
Yeah, that is certainly in the weird space, right?
We've definitely have found ourselves in a space where people have willingly come to the realization that their social security number is going to get stolen, their credit card number is going to get stolen, their computer is going to get hijacked, and they just are willing to pay the price.
Well,
it's probably cheaper than, again, we're back to, it's cheaper than patching the box.
You know, it's kind of funny you say that, because there are so many times I have heard that downtime to do that, to patch that, will cost me X. What's the likelihood that this is going to give me damage, and how certain are you? And, you know, what's the best that we can do? Rough guesses?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what we've got.
Yeah.
The unfortunate part is, and again, I'll keep referencing that report from a couple of podcasts ago, which is fantastic. That's the first time I've seen actual research and hard data on this. But and this is not a slight against them. It's just the state of affairs.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have decades and decades of data, because when, you know, this, our landscape, our systems, our patterns of behavior change, so the technology changes so rapidly,
yep,
that by the time we have data on something, it's obsolete, outdated, and we're trying a new paradigm, which takes us to cloud. Right? The shared responsibility model is both the cause and the solution to every security ill.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, look, think about it this way. How many,
sure.
So the standard question that we've been being asked for years is going to the cloud more or less secure than my current environment? And the answer is yes. To both of those, depending
more
on...
More and less.
Depending on the kind of company you are, because there are, I can name several companies that I've worked with that are like, dude, whatever the cloud is doing is better than what you've got, right? And then I've seen the other, like, wow, you guys have a great scenario here. I don't think the cloud can match that. In your current setup, by default, but understanding this concept of the shared responsibility model is tough, because the first time you have an IR incident in the cloud server, you go, great, where do I pull the hard disks from?
Well, yeah, exactly. Where? Who owns that? Who's gonna get me
Dear Amazon.
Who's giving my image? Yeah, exactly. Hey, Mr. Bezos, we need to pull a disk drive from one of your data centers. Yeah, right. Like, that's gonna happen.
That is not in this or any other lifetime. Right?
No, you're talking. Well, I had an argument with a security peer about encryption. We'll circle back to the cloud thing. I guarantee you, this will tie in. I had an argument with a security peer about encryption, and we start with it actually was in the middle of a cloud discussion, and we started talking about, what do I need to encrypt in the cloud? And he said to me, well, we've got to have disk level encryption. And I said, why? What for? And he goes, well, you know, we want disk level encryption because what if one of the disks walks off? And I'm like, hold on a second. You're talking about a highly secure, and I always forget the tier of data centers, I think like tier 5 data center, you know, owned by, you know, one of the big companies.
One of the biggest companies on the planet.
Not to mention the fact that my guess is if you pull that one drive out of that entirely large rated system, sheer luck, you actually are able to pull data off of that drive, I guarantee you, whatever you get is going to be so illogical and completely unusable. You now have to ask yourselves, what does disk level encryption give you? I mean, and you know, me as a security guy is advocating on why? Why would you put that control in place? Why would you do that? You're spending money on something that you don't need.
Well, if you've got IP, right? The arguments I've heard, the counterpoint to that is, we do that because when we have a virtual server that's at rest, meaning that it's you know, paused or shut down or mm-hmm. whatever, right? Whatever's in there is encrypted, which is great. We don't have to worry about that, right? But when we spin it back up, then it's at moving. It's moving again, and it's like, well, then you've got data in transit. Do we encrypt data in transit? Like, well, no, because no. Okay, well, that's a different problem.
Now you're jumping up the wonderful steps of encryption stack.
You've got
the data at rest encryption. You start at disk level, then you got your data at rest, whatever you're using it for that model, and your transport layer encryption. And dude, encryption is going to be the bane of security.
It has been.
For the, it, It has been. It's going to get worse in the cloud world. I truly believe that, it's going to turn into something that's going to be a sticking point for a lot of companies in a lot of different ways, because of the fact that we don't know. I don't think we really know how to handle it yet.
Well, so the funny part was when this the PGP mail thing was going around, right? There was I forget who it was. It was one of the crypto guys on Twitter mentioned. He's like, "Yeah, I've analyzed the situation. And I don't think I'm qualified to assess it." And people were like, "Wait, you're one of like the five people that we trust on crypto." He's like, "Yeah, but I'm not sure I understand what's going on." It's like, I understand how crypto works. I have no idea how this implementation worked. And it's like, Oh, okay. So, as in all good, in all really amusing failures, the failure isn't in the underlying the protocol itself or the spec. It's how it was implemented, and that magically and instantly teleports me back to the late '90s or 2000s. Where every developer that wrote an app, we tell them, you need to do, transport level or field level encryption. Like, we'll write our own. I'm like, oh God, please don't. Like, seriously, please don't. Whatever you think you're doing, it's wrong. Yeah, we are.
We're still there. There's no doubt. We're still there. And whether you have your application on prem or you're moving it to cloud or you're already in the cloud, we're going to run into the competing encryption models, and it's going to get even more interesting when you start to add in all of the big players' own encryption platforms and key storage vaults and all of the wonderful stuff that they bring to the table as well, too. Not to mention the legal aspects of it as well, too.
Yeah, we don't have enough time on this show to talk about legal, to go into the legal aspect, because this is all fun and games until the lawyers get involved. It doesn't matter anymore anyway. Man. Because like whatever policy you say, you're like, this is what security says, and a lawyer show up, they're like, yeah, none of that works for me.
Yeah, it all gets thrown out at the end of the day because it's whatever's in the contract.
Well, I recently did a talk on and this is totally relevant to this, on threat modeling for like an executive level, and so I simplified everything down to super the attack type, what the vulnerability is, what the attack is, the mitigation, just very simple threat modeling concepts. And we got to, all right, so let's walk through an exercise of this. And I walked somebody through it, and I knew the mistake they were going to make. And it's the same one everybody else makes, and that is classifying everything. Everything is high. Everything's important. Everything's critical, right? I'm like, okay, great. So everything here is high. Let's talk about, what the worst case scenarios are. Okay, death occurs. All right, fine. I believe that. If you tell me it is, then it is. Okay, great. So what about the attack? How hard is this attack to execute? Oh, trivial. Okay. Keep in mind, you've been doing security for 20 years, right? You're a professional. Now, look at it from the eye of sort of the broader picture. How hard is this to execute? Like, well, like, so tell me what's required. Like, well, you have to do this, and you got to be on the box. And then once you're there, I'm like, stop. You lost me at on the box. Like, if I'm on the box, I've won. The game is over.
Yep.
Or, by the way, I have physical access to it. Oh, great. I'm going to hack it. No, I'm not. I'm going to pick it up and walk out of the room with it.
Yeah.
Done.
End of story.
And I've won, right? So all these – it's these avenues – and you're right. This goes all the way back to the original thing we started on, threat and vulnerability management. It's a tough topic because it's almost always about your unique perspective and your unique analysis, and you're basically trying to get a bunch of my friend keeps saying, he's like, I don't have ducks. They're not in the row. I have a bunch of rabid squirrels and they're mad as hell. I'm like, that's what trying to get a risk management meeting in IT sounds like always.
Here's the best advice I can give to all my security peers out there. Get to know your sysadmins, your Windows Server admins, your storage admins. Take them out for coffee. Figure out what their favorite whiskey, vodka, or other spirit is.
I'm in.
and just start having conversations with them and get them on your side. That's the best thing you can do as a security practitioner.
I like that. That's a good place to end the show before we get too ranty. All right, man. Well, it's been fun having you on the show. I can't believe the time flew by so quickly. Fun conversation.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, well, now you can't be a stranger. You've been on once, which means next time it's going to be easier, and you'll definitely have to be on again.
Oh yeah, I'll be back. I'll be back. We'll have to take on the cloud subject a little bit more. I think that that journey's just beginning for me.
Like so. like a late Friday night burrito. You'll be back.
All right, folks, thanks for listening. Hey, if you've got ideas, 300's the next show. I think I know who I'm going to interview, but if you think you've guessed it, let me know. We'll see if anybody's correct. We're going to carry on. 300's not the end, not the beginning. It's just sort of, you know, it's another step in our journey. I can't believe we've been doing it long enough to get 300 numbered episodes, which means probably about 30 or 40 unnumbered episodes out there. Holy crap. And James isn't here, but he's in spirit always. So one more, and that's it. And then we've got 300, and we start the clock back at 301. All right, Chris, thanks for joining us. This has been fun.
All right, Raph. You take care, man.
All right, guys. Thanks for listening to Down to Security Rabbit Hole podcast. Check us out on the RSS feed. Catch us on iTunes, Down to Security Rabbit Hole podcast, if you're borrowing your friend's iPod Shuffle to listen to this. And we will see you on another time, another place, on another Down the Security Rabbit Hole. Ciao, y'all. Bye.
As we fade out on another Down the Security Rabbit Hole episode, we'd like to encourage you to chat with our hosts and guests using the Twitter hashtag #DTSR. Please check out the show notes, catch up on any episodes you may have missed, and subscribe so you don't miss a future episode. Our website is whiterabbit.net, whiterabbit.net. So on behalf of Rafal, James, for now it's goodbye. We'll see you soon on another Down the Security Rabbit Hole podcast.